Okay, everybody, let me ask you this. Is anybody didn't do their homework?
I didn't complete it.
Which one did you miss?
The last two questions.
Okay. You wrote an essay? How long was your essay?
Mine's just... I did a 5-paragraph essay there. Actually, 4. I'm sorry. I just did 4 paragraphs. Summed it up.
It's kind of lengthy. What did you do?
I have a paragraph.
That's all right. It's not a matter of essay. I mean, indicates a little bit longer.
Yeah.
And you, Gonzalez?
Yeah, go on. Yes. I make a list like a chart.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to ask the entire 3 classes of Delonius. Okay, that you can just hand in. But are your other questions on the same sheet? So we'll just consider that an exercise. But just let's, all we can do is summarize the essence of that particular question. What are the 3 classes of devotees, and what are the, some of the categories, characteristics? Anyone?
We have the first class devotee. His characteristics, that he's expert in the study of scriptures and can defeat any argument presented to him. He has firm faith in the scriptures and does not deviate from them. He has already strictly followed the rules and regulations under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master and has sincerely obeyed him in accord with the revealed scriptures.
Okay. Second class.
It's no very expert in the study of relevant scriptures. No very expert in arguing on the strength of revealed scripture. Although he can be defeated by argument, has firm faith in the procedure of devotional service unto Krishna.
That's the main thing. See, to be engaged in devotional service means to be pretty much situated on the second class platform, which is the Madhyaman platform. From there we can aspire to the highest platform, but we should be off the neophyte platform, or the third class. Third class platform really means materialistic devotee. And so in other words, it's called Kanista. Kanista is K-A-N-I-S-T-H-A. Kanista simply means neophyte. And neophyte devotee sees the whole process of devotional service through material vision. Sees everything materially. He sees the devotees from a bodily perspective. He sees the deities somewhere, like stones and wood, yet. He has the respect and regard for the spiritual master. He may also honor the Lord, but he doesn't get along with devotees too good. And at the same time, he's not compassionate to people in general. That's the third class devotee. That stage, it's a neophyte stage, and sometimes we have to go through that stage, but it's a stage that we aspire to get out of. We aspire for the second class platform, which takes time to reach. It's not that all of a sudden you can reach these platforms. But you should know all the characteristics of a person on the second class platform so you can see what you need to work on. So what are the characteristics of a person on the second class platform?
The second class devotee is not very expert in presenting the conclusion of the scripture and can be defeated by the opposite party. But he is still undoubted within himself that Krishna is the supreme object of worship.
Yeah, that's one of the characteristics. What's another characteristic? These are not mentioned directly there. You should know these in general. This is an extension of that principle, not directly well. That is 4 characteristics on the second. first one is that he
sees the guru as respect for spiritual concept and adore it as supreme order.
He worships the spirit. What's his relationship with the other devotees?
Best friends and his friends
with the devotees. He's friends with the other devotees, worships the Lord. And then what is his other two activities?
He preaches to an innocent.
Preaches to the innocent and
avoids the enemies.
He avoids the enemies, not the devotees.
This is in Shishanshan. This is the message. Was the last one preaching innocent and patient? Both was
and avoids enemies.
This is not here, huh?
Yeah, it's not here. It's in. What was the question?
This is not in the next.
I'm sorry.
Okay,
I've been pushing that. Okay, go ahead.
This information that you are telling to us is not in the net of devotion.
No, it's in part of that.
But it's nice to know.
Just talk about the second class, I don't know. But here, these are three classes of devotees as characterized by Rupa Goswami in this particular. So, and what is the danger of being on the third class platform?
Before now.
To go away, yeah. So Krishna consciousness is more or less a development of faith, which brings about knowledge. Knowledge increases, faith increases. As your knowledge of Krishna consciousness, Krishna increases, your faith increases, and then your faith leads to more knowledge. That's more or less it. Yes.
As for the Ushma Adipati, first, another party that's mentioned there, I guess, but also interesting to know, is about the. He sees all living entities as servants of God and sees himself as actually a servant, so he doesn't preach also. No preaching.
Yeah. That's Jai Om. Vishnuvad, Paramahansa, Parivachakachar. So Paramahansa is what you're speaking about, Hansa. And then Parivachakacharya, we say that right after me. He comes down to that platform, which is the preaching platform. Otherwise, preaching means to make distinctions, and the Paramahansa devotee doesn't make distinctions. Prabhupada, when he left his body, he was apologizing to everyone. Because Prabhupada was a Paramahansa, but he came down in order to preach. He said, I spoke so strongly, I had to use strong words. So therefore I apologize. But that was his humility. Humility. So in order to preach, you have to make a distinction. This is the demons, this is the envious, this is the devotees, But a Paramahansa, first class devotee doesn't make distinctions. you can speak.
The second class devotee, Mahayana Ikari, he preaches, but he doesn't. He's not very expert in Arwin. And can be defeated by others.
Yeah.
At the same time, the first class devotee is very expert in presenting the scriptures, but it is said that Uttama Adhikari doesn't preach. So of what is the why the only devotee who preaches in Madhyamadikari, but he's not very expert in that one. So
not
it's supposed to be that Madhyamadikari should be very expert.
There's different classes. Just like a spiritual master is the first class devotee. But at the same time he's acting on the second class platform. He's acting on the second class platform, but he's a first class devotee. So, although he's acting on that platform, he still doesn't mean he's on the second class. He's on the first, but he's acting on the second for the sake of preaching. Therefore, one of the qualifications of a spiritual master is that he must know the scriptures and be able to defeat all opposing arguments. So, although he's. There is. Uttama Arikara means, Uttama means the best, the highest. And still he comes down to Madhyama. Why? For preaching. But still, there are people who are Madhyama, but they're not, you know, they don't have that realization of Uttama. Or they're not on it, they're not first class devotees. They haven't dropped down to that platform for preaching, they have just attained the second class.
So they're preaching, but they are not very expert.
Yeah, not very expert. Or they may be expert, but still they can be defeated. Have you ever come across Mayavadis who know the full scriptures? It's very difficult to beat these people. Yeah, expert. And you really have to have a working knowledge of scripture. Not just know it, but be able to explain it. In relationship to other arguments.
So the spiritual master should be always a Uttamadikari who descends to Madhyamadikari?
No. That's mentioned in Nectar of Instructions that there are two kinds of spiritual masters. Those who says that the spiritual master is on the Uttamadikari class. But there are Madhyamadikari platforms, spiritual masters. That's Krishna arranges, but sometimes there's just not an uttamam to take initiation from. So one should take initiation because it's a must. One cannot not take initiation, one has to take initiation. So in that case, he takes one from the second class platform. And if that person from the second class platform, he can progress upward. And if he can, it means he can take his disciples also along with him. But let's get back to the text. I think that's important. There's a lot of subsidiary points here. Okay. So, three classes of devotees are pretty clear. Oh, thank you for coming. I was hoping you'd come. I was thinking your classes weren't so interesting.
Oh,
no,
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. So we're just going over the homework questions. Did you get those?
I'm sorry, I read the chapter also.
You read the chapter.
Again.
I'm in a very compassionate mood today. I don't say anything. But the thing is, it's for your benefit. So try. Do you have the questions?
I have.
You have them, so you have a copy of this.
No, I wrote
everything down. Okay. You know, when you send me a copy, it's nice you can send anyone. He does it so nice. But, that means you're going to have to go back over them. Do them anyway at one point. Okay? Okay. So, we're going over the questions now. Discuss how the wise man is the best among the four categories of pious people. Discuss how the wise man is among the four categories of pious people. So what are the four categories of pious people? Let's see, let's do a hand raising program. Yes.
What categories
do we
have? No, I don't know. Not a
Yeah, one is looking for wealth or money.
One that has problems, I don't know how, reading the book.
Being
intelligent and being the curious.
Curious is one, but the other one is one who is
what?
He's wise in the sense that he's come to find out the absolute truth. Then he comes to Krishna consciousness to know God. He's not coming out of curiosity. The last two, curiosity and wanting to know God, are considered to be the best. And the other two are more considered to be more on the material part. People coming out of distress or coming out of there are people who take the spiritual life because they understand by taking the spiritual life they can understand how things work. And by worshiping God, they know that they increase their pious activities and therefore they get money. So they get, not as, when they say wealth, it's not necessarily just money, it means something material. They approach God for some material things. Like a home or a car or something. It's more like they want something. So people who are aware of the power of devotional service also are aware of the fact that then you can get material things from it. Okay, so that's the four. Now, here it's mentioned the wise man is the best among the four. Why? What was the discussion? I'll just pick Jerry for this one. Why is the wise man the best?
The wise man is the best among the pious because if he is attached to Krishna, he is not seeking an exchange of material benefits. A wise man who becomes attached to Krishna does not want any return from him, either in the form of relieving distress or gaining money. This means that from the very beginning, his basic principle of attachment to Krishna is more or less love. Furthermore, due to his wisdom and study of sastras, he can understand also that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Okay. He's the best. Because he's come for the right reason. But what does Krishna call all four of them?
Mahatmas.
He calls them Mahatma. Why is the term Mahatma used in this regard? Because although they have material, desires, they've come to the right place. And what happens? What if they stay?
They purify those low desires?
Yes. They lose those material desires and get a higher taste. So that's why Krishna said, whereas opposed to someone who has these desires but goes somewhere else to fulfill them. Doesn't go to God. Sometimes we say you shouldn't go to God for anything material, but it's an injunction. Never discourage anyone to go coming to God from no matter what they are. Always, it's not that you pat them on the back, but you let them understand that it's nice you went to God for this, but actually God is going to give you much more than what you really want, and with something that is greater, more benefit, and actually really is what you're looking for. So very gently and very carefully try to encourage them to give up that desire and to take to the real desire, which is to serve God, using devotional service. What example was used for a neophyte person?
For the trains is agenda. For the workers, people.
Yeah, he was engaged in gender. He went because of distress. He was asking for protection.
wealth
in Dhruva Maharaj.
Dhruva Maharaj, because he wanted wealth, kingdom, distress, and what was the next one?
Kumaras.
Kumaras, they approached because they were
wise.
And also, Prabhupada mentioned that Samyaka Rishi, he says it. So they were inquisitive.
Yeah.
So generally, outside of these four reasons, you can easily come. Why did I come to Krishna consciousness? See which one category you fit in, and at the same time, see how you can aspire for the highest category. Because Krishna mentions later on in that same discussion with Arjuna that, you know, the best of them all is the wise person, and he gives many reasons why. Okay. What is the perfect conception of spiritual life? Compare this with the other two conceptions of life. What is the perfect conception?
To know our original constitutional position as servant of Krishna.
Where did you say that?
In the
33. Where? Oh yeah, perfect confidence. Knowledge of one's constitutional position. You did all your homework today, didn't you?
Hmm?
You did all your homework today, right? This is still so fresh in
the class. Oh, yeah, you did it right before you came to class.
Very good strategy. It's all right, whatever. There's no rules and regulations. Okay, that is the perfect conception of life, to be situated in one's constitutional position. What is our constitutional position? Both in the conditioned and liberated state?
Yes.
Yeah. See, that's where the Mayavada is, or other impersonalists say. That the living entity is separate, but when they become liberated, then there's no more separate, they become one. But that remains eternal. That's important to understand, because liberation is not to lose one's identity, but to lose one's material identity. Spiritual identity becomes taken on as one becomes, you know, when we say reaching the path to perfection. So one starts to understand what is my spiritual identity, but at the same time they lose their material identity. But identity is always there. Everyone has a designation according to what is their individual nature. This is also explained later on, just to get into the higher aspects of Krishna consciousness. Not only do you mean in your identity, you actually know what your identity is, who you are in the spiritual world, what is your relationship with Krishna, what is your service to Krishna, what is your form, what is your bodily color, what is your name, what group you belong to in the spiritual world, who is your group leader. All that. Yeah. It is Krishna's family.
Did Prabhupada ever say it?
Yes?
The what?
No, my question was asked and he answered one time he didn't answer at all, another time he said, "That you do not require." the Lord's is really your business.
I heard somebody saying that he answered that if he knew it, he would have to go to the
basement. He said if, he also said if you know you would faint. Prabhupada, someone asked Prabhupada, who are you? Prabhupada said, if I told you, you would faint. It was sent by Krishna. He was not coming out of the material world. He was a terrible associate with Krishna. Krishna sent him. He knew his identity. So you could also, there actually is a process of knowing your identity of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. You remove that from the process of Bhakti Yoga, it doesn't have any abused. So now our identity is understood by the third verse of Shukshastra, which is
what's that like to play it?
Trinadati Sinichanate Vasa Mahanina Manadi Hatskirtanya. Then our identity is, in our eternal position, is to remain humble servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And our identity is always serving humbly, with tolerance, with giving respect to others, and not expecting respect for oneself. That is Prabhupada said, and that's Bhakti Siddhanta said, that's your swarup. But your identity is that you're always serving. And that could be the Mayavadis and other groups, they say, you practice becoming servant until you become perfect, then you become master.
That's crazy.
Yeah. They use the example, the spiritual master is like a ladder. And you use the ladder to climb. And once you get to the top, you don't need the ladder anymore.
You're not one of those.
Huh? Logical, but it doesn't apply. It's not true. They just take an example out of the
That's why my last would be really good for America.
Oh, it's great. It's great. And people love it because it's a wonderful way to have sense gratification and be spiritual at the same time. That's their whole philosophy. Because there's a principle of no surrender.
Can I ask a question? I don't want to get on too off subject here, so if it is, please, I'll ask later. Why would Krishna send Prabhupada or any other representative down when he is put in the situation where he gets married and he has that ability to
it's all his legal.
It's all his legal.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just going through that situation. So it appears that he's in, why does he have to go through that part? Not everyone has to do that, but in the case of Prabhupada, sometimes Krishna, from the beginning, the person shows his self-effulgence, and sometimes he later develops his self-effulgence. When he later develops, the Lord wants to show that this is how the process works. That you can also become perfect who follow the process, using the example of this pure devotee. Otherwise, if there's just people who come and they're just perfect, they don't follow the process of this, then people think, I don't really have to work at it. Even Krishna took on a spiritual master. Lord Chaitanya had Ishwara. Both Krishna and Lord Chaitanya didn't need spiritual masters. But to show by example that this is what's required in order to practice. Especially in the case of Krishna, where he was in the role of the Sphinx to be born. Okay. That's basically it. Mahavir Maharaj was saying in class this morning, Bhakti Vinod Thakur's early life was somewhat a deviant series of activities. But still, he was a highly empowered personality. He can understand these things. So you don't criticize, but at the same time you see that it appears, you see, they're not covered like the ordinary conditioned cells. They're not covered like the ordinary conditioned cells. Their covering is like apparently a little thin layer, and as soon as they be processed, it's all wiped away. But once we leave the process, then we have to begin. And there may be other reasons too, why Krishna wanted it to happen that way. Prabhupada talks about himself, he talks inside of himself as a conditioned soul. But then again, when he talks about himself in other times, he talks about, he says, when I remember sitting on the lap of my sister when I was 6 months old. I can remember it even now. So how can someone remember when they were 6 months old? That feels clear to me. Six-month-year-old baby can remember what they did, I don't know, 100 years, I don't know, 80 years later. So, Prabhupada showed both sides. An ordinary conditioned soul and a very highly liberated soul. We have to take it. And once he was a highly liberated soul, but he was also playing the part of the conditioned soul. And sometimes Krishna covers them just to show their glory like that. Okay. So, compare this with the other two conceptions of life. The perfect conception of life is to be situated in one's constitutional position. That means to engage in transcendental loving service to the Lord internally. Now, what are the other two positions? Which are? Desire to become one with the Lord, which is a little higher, and then just desire to find happiness through material sense gratification. So, how is this position superior? Or compare it in whatever way you want.
This kind of goes along with the harmony of the previous time, or the three types of happiness. So mukti and mukti actually temporary. Even if one becomes liberated, like Bhagavad Gita said, there is still every chance you can fall from that position. And naturally, material enjoyment will be temporary. Oh. But when engaged in devotional service, it's eternal occupation. So that will be the highest, naturally.
Eternal occupation. When one is situated in one's constitutional position, they are connected with the Supreme Lord. Whereas the others are they simply on, one is on the sensual platform, and the other one is on the mental platform. Which are platforms which are always changing, unstable.
And also, the devotee, by engaging in devotional service, he automatically gets liberation and material wealth.
Like, yeah. Even now, when you're engaged in devotional service, you should know that the process itself is on the liberated platform. The Prabhupada used to tell us, you're already liberated. As long as you stay in the process, you're liberated. As soon as you stop, then you fall from that. You're on the liberated platform. Because devotional service, or the process of bhakti, is not within the realm of the three modes of material nature. It's above that. Therefore, it's on the liberated platform. So as you plug into that energy, you also take on less. You're into that energy. As soon as you step out of the energy, then you're back down and you're from the monks again. And therefore, simply staying engaged in devotional service means you're liberated. Okay? You may not realize it. Realization will come when you actually attain that state of awareness. Okay?
Now, although bhakti is completely transcendental, it's still in the third time to a Bhagavatam completely speaks about these types of bhakti that's in ignorance, passion, and goodness, and transcendental. So can you explain
that? That's an interesting discussion on that. You want to go into that?
I'm a little bit curious because you're mentioning that it's on a liberated platform, but at the same time we have information about bhakti being in the mode of darkness, and mode of passion, mode of goodness.
It's tinged by each three of these modes. It's not that it's in the mode of that. It means that the practitioner, bhakti is never in the mode of anything. But the practitioner is engaged in devotional service, but still tinged by characteristics that are conducive to one of these modes. So just like there's devotional service in the mode of ignorance. And what is that? Person is envious of other devotees, he finds fault. Still, he's doing service. He can't, he's finding fault. He's envious of other devotees. He doesn't have complete understanding of knowledge. He hasn't developed, the qualities. He's still tinged by the mode of ignorance, but he's engaged in the process. So. We realize the fact is that if he stays engaged in the process, he will give up these things and rise gradually. So devotional service can never be in the mode is that we can practice devotional service in these modes. We are in the mode and we're practicing devotion. So we practice in the mode of ignorance, we practice in the mode of passion, and we also practice in the mode of goodness. Devotional service is called Sudha Sattva. Sudha means pure goodness, transcendental. And what's an example? Example is the air. The air is pure, but as it blows through different sections, it picks up the aroma of that section. And as it picks up the aroma of whatever section it's gone, the air smells good or bad. But the air never really, is bad or good. It's just that it's picking up whatever it's in. So devotional service is like that, and it takes on the certain characteristics according to the consciousness of the person. That's a good example of the air.
When you're talking about liberation, anyone engaged in devotional services on the liberated platform, are you referring to liberation as in the impersonalist conception of liberation?
No, see, and remember when we discussed this in the first chapter, what is one of the characteristics of devotional service?
There's six of them. Brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress, the beginning of all auspiciousness, automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure, early achieved, even derived. The conception of liberation?
Yeah. So it derives all conceptions of liberation. So it's just the example is given is when you have $100, you also have $50. So liberation, bhakti and mukti are included in bhakti. Not as a foremost principle, but as a byproduct. In other words, a devotee, Prabhupada was talking this morning, he says, a devotee gets material happiness, a devotee gets happiness, he gets material things. But these are like gifts from Krishna, when he's engaged in devotional service. Krishna gets these things. They're part of it. And you're already liberated. You don't realize it. Realization comes as the consciousness becomes more purified. We're on the liberated platform as long as we remain fixed in our service. I guess what do we have? How do we say it? It's the difference between say you, and here's an example I just thought of. You play the lottery, right? Somebody's alarmed. Okay, I'll give you an example. Say you played the lottery and you won. But you're sitting in your house with your ticket. Now, you really want, the money's yours, but you haven't collected it yet. So that would be the example. You're ready or wealthy, but you don't realize it, or you haven't cashed in on it yet. Example. So when one engages in devotional service, material happiness follows, liberation.
Liberation
means
to be free from material
sadness? Means be free from material miseries.
But
your miseries are illusion. As soon as you stop realizing you're not miserable, you'll be happy. You're not miserable, you just think you are.
I kind of feel it's miserable.
As soon as somebody tells you, Krishna loves you, you're on your way back to home to go after Godhead, everything is perfect, the prasadam is here, what are you worried about? Hey, you're right, I'm happy. Oh, okay. You just gave up all your problems. Your mind just creates the illusion that you're in anxiety, you need this, that, this, that, this, that, this, that, this ain't right, that ain't right, this ain't right. Just stop thinking about it, they go away. Mind just brings us into a state of what we say a fantasy, and we dwell on these things. But you're right in the midst of Krishna's mercy. You just have to open your eyes and see it all around you and take advantage of it. And then when you do that, you'll give up your anxieties. When you refuse to do that, then therefore, although you're in the best position, you can't take advantage of it. You just can't take advantage of it because you want to remain in ignorance.
I think sometimes I think
let go.
For a very long time,
we didn't
control my
let go. Just let go. Let go and let go. As soon as you keep hanging on to it, the monkey, they catch monkeys. Now they catch monkeys.
They cut a banana.
You put something inside of a, and put it inside of a tree, and they make a hole in the tree. And the hole is this big enough for the monkey to get his hand in it. So he grabs the banana or whatever it is, and nut or something. Makes a fist, and he wants to get it out, but he can't because as soon as he makes the fist, the hole becomes completely too small for his hand to get through. He can't pull it out. But if he just lets go of the object, he gets out. But it won't. So we're just hanging on to our material desires, and we're in so much anxiety. So as soon as we let go of it, I'm into the rain. Krishna's here, the devotees are here, Prasadam's here, the books are here, Prabhupada's here. It's all wonderful. Yeah, when you live outside, you're surrounded by other things.
And even back home, you have all these pictures, and you have listening to lectures, and here, listening to music, and sometimes you just forget, you know. Mm-hmm. Like the boy is
Yeah, but it's just a matter of it's conditioning. It's a conditioning. So, therefore, stay in the process, and then the conditioning will work. But you should know that as long as you're in the process, you're liberated, although you don't realize it yet. It's just a matter of realizing. The realization will come later.
Develop this sort of because mainly we are afraid to let go because we don't have any faith. Like we're a little bit afraid, like if I let go, what's going to be my position? Mm-hmm. So we're afraid because we don't have any shraddha. So how do we develop that? Because then we have faith, then it becomes easy to let go.
Faith is, just explains how faith is developed. How is faith developed? There's different ways. One,
Sadhusanga.
Therefore, the first stage in bhakti is to develop association with devotees. That helps to develop your faith. As you have you may have preliminary faith, and as soon as you step inside association with devotees, then your faith will grow. What's another one? In that sadhu sangha, what do you do?
Chant.
Mm-hmm. You chant, but the other aspect.
Here.
Hearing your faith develops. Faith develops by hearing, and especially by hearing from
the next knowledge.
Yeah. That kind of hearing is it goes right to the heart and awakens devotion.
Yeah,
those who are advanced are realized persons. Christians who are realized. So these are the main ways that faith develops. Hearing and association. Sitam prasangam mamavirya samvido bhavanti yatkana rasaya katata. You know that verse? Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-25. Because hearing is sweet. And the process is to hear as much as possible. So when you're outside in the association of non-devotees, surrounded by materialistic people and materialistic activities, you're getting a different sound vibration. And that's reinforcing your material desires. Or it's causing disturbance within your mind. Because that kind of hearing, you shouldn't accept. So you have to block it out, and you try to block it out, and it's there. It's like you're fighting just to exist. So therefore, even while one is in that type of arena, one should adopt a planned method for hearing. One should hear regularly. So fortunately, by the advancement of technology, we have tape recorders and other forms of, media where we can hear a lot. And they can be used. We have to hear. Yes. I'm being attacked by food for life.
That's the reason that I'm here.
Yeah.
It's
okay. Establish that happiness in devotional life. Establish that happiness in devotional life is the highest and analyze eligibility for such devotional service. So, happiness in devotional life is the highest. So what is it, what principle is it based on? Or what are some of the reasons why it's the highest?
It said that neither of the forms of happiness is actually attainable, because you can't. And material happiness can't be obtained, because everybody's constantly struggling to be the topmost head man among all his fellow men. And then that concept is applied to the unlimited, which is liberation, so that one actually wants to become one with the greatest of all. And neither of these are actually obtainable. So therefore, devotional service is the highest happiness.
That's the answer. These things are not attainable. Material happiness is, Prabhupada said, basically, if you want to understand what material happiness is, and if you think there is material happiness, it's basically one drop of water in the desert. Therefore, can a drop satisfy a person who's in the desert and who's thirsty? What the, you imagine if you're thirsty and you're in the desert and someone gives you a drop?
You're frustrated.
Yeah.
You're more angry.
Yeah. It just increases your anxiety. So material happiness, what is that? And what else does it do? It's temporary, therefore it's gone in a few seconds. And happiness in the material world is friendship, society, and love. Family life. Family life. There's some happiness in family life. A little bit. But then that's the drop in the desert. Eligibility for devotional service. So that's the name of the chapter. What is the qualities that make one eligible for devotional service?
One has to be freed from the bodily concept of life. Middle paragraph. It can be concluded that a person who is free from the bodily concept of life is an eligible candidate for pure devotional service. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that after Brahman realization, when one is freed from material anxieties and can see every living entity on an equal level, he is eligible to enter into devotional service.
So when Prabhupada says devotional service, he means what? Something that is free from all tinges of the material world. We are not engaged in devotional service. We are practicing devotional service and hoping to attain the platform of devotion. Devotional service begins on the platform when one is actually liberated or realizes that they're not this body. When you realize you're not the body, and devotional service. Now we're practicing. We're going through the motions. We're learning. We're developing some of the qualities. But we're on a platform of mixture. Sometimes we're on the bodily platform. Sometimes we're on the mental platform. Sometimes we're on the sensual platform. Sometimes we're on the intellectual platform. And sometimes in cases like when we're in kirtan or we're absorbed in our service, we're getting a taste of what it's like to be in devotional service. When the mind and the senses are fully engaged in any activity, then we're actually in devotional service, absorbed. But how often do we become absorbed? Because the mind is always moving. So we have to learn through the process how to keep the mind fixed and directed in devotional service. Then gradually one will be freed from the bodily conception of life.
So in the first paragraph, the first chapter, then Prabhupada mentioned that because due to the association with Mahatmas, maybe a person will develop an attraction for Krishna, although he's still with material attachments, he's still he has faith in Krishna, he's eligible for devotional service.
Yeah, Prabhupada talks about that. Generally, a person cannot take up devotional service unless they've had some contact with the infinite side. It's like a cyclical, circular. And you can't take up devotional service unless you have something in your past life. So, at the same time, you know, how is it you can begin if you have nothing in your past life? So the point is, Prabhupada says that there is a that somehow by the mercy of the pure devotee, one is given the opportunity to serve. Because of the mercy of the spiritual master, he's allowing those who have no qualifications to engage in the highest nature. And look at, I mean, those, if you know the system, that Prabhupada was highly criticized for bringing Krishna consciousness to West. These people who are outside the Vedic culture cannot practice it because they're lowborn. They're born in families of meat eaters and they have all bad habits. Therefore, they're not eligible to practice devotional service. And that was their argument. And that's the Vedas, they also say that. But what's the point? Is that if the spiritual master wants to show his mercy, then Krishna is obliged to give that mercy to that person. He's obliged to give that mercy to that person. And of course, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda don't make any discrimination. So we have that mercy. In this age, the eligibility to practice has been practically dropped. In other words, if one is just somehow or other willing to practice, then the mercy will allow one to continue. But to stay in it, that's hard. Because steadiness is the steadiness, one can only become steady in devotional service if they are constantly getting rid of their material desires. As long as if one holds on to their material desires, they cannot become steady. The material desires will push them outside of devotional state. So steadiness is really the platform of devotional service, to remain steady. What may happen to one who comes to the Lord either out of distress or need of money once their desires is fulfilled? That was my question. I added that. What may happen to one who comes to the Lord either out of distress or in need of money once their desire is fulfilled? What may happen? Yes.
He will realize what he was asking for is nothing compared with what he gets from Krishna. Like Dhruva Maharaj was embarrassed.
That's what I said in here, that they'll get the association of a pure devotee. It said they'll get the association of a pure devotee and be able to elevate themselves. Like what it puts on.
That was my question was, what may happen when one comes to the Lord either out of distress or in need of money, once their desire is fulfilled, then they'll, because they're no longer, you know, trying to fulfill those desires, if the desire is satisfied, they have accomplished why they came here, so they may go back to the eternal world again. It happens a lot. People come out of distress. The point is that they forget. They forget because Krishna consciousness is a platform where you actually forget how much you suffered before. Which makes you forget your suffering, makes you forget everything. Then once you achieve that, then you start to think, well, now I'm okay. And then therefore I can, now I should, you know, I don't need devotional service. In other words, they come to devotional service looking for something material. When they get it, they are happy and they go back to material life, forgetting how much they suffered before. Happiness a lot. But the other way is also true, that they'll forget about their material desires. Even though they're fulfilled, they get a higher taste. That's hopefully what will happen. They get a higher taste. But they have to give up that desire. Okay. So let's continue with the reading, and so we can move on here. As we're in about a half hour plus time, let's continue with the reading. At the bottom of page 32. I was stated before. Someone can read?
As stated before, there are three kinds of happiness: material, spiritual, and devotional. Devotional service and the happiness due to its execution are not possible as long as one is materially affected. If someone has desire for material enjoyment or for becoming one with the Supreme, these are both considered material concepts. Because the impersonalist cannot appreciate the spiritual happiness of association and the exchange of loving affairs with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their ultimate goal is to become one with the Lord. This concept is simply an extension of the material idea. In the material world, everyone is trying to be the topmost head among all his fellow men or neighbors. Either communally, socially, or nationally, everyone is competing to be greater than all others in the material concept of life. This greatness can be extended to the unlimited, so that one actually wants to become one with the greatest of all, the Supreme Lord. This is also a material concept, although maybe a little more advanced.
Okay. Everyone is trying to become the topmost. So this competing nature may also take on competition in devotional life.
Next paragraph. However, the perfect spiritual concept applies with complete knowledge of one's constitutional position, in which one knows enough to detail himself, devote himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. One must know that he is finite and that the Lord is infinite. Thus, it is not possible to actually become one with the Lord even if one aspires for this. It is simply not possible. Therefore, anyone who has any desire or aspiration for satisfying his senses by becoming more and more important, either in material sense or in spiritual sense, cannot actually relish the real sweet taste of devotional service. Srila Rupa Goswami has therefore compared forcing these Mukti, material and Mukti liberation desires with being influenced by the black art of switch. In both cases, one is in trouble. Mukti means material enjoyment, and Mukti means become freed from material anxiety and to become one with the Lord. These desires are compared to being haunted hunted by ghosts and witches, because while these aspirations for material enjoyment or spiritual oneness with the supreme remain, no one can relish the actual transcendental taste of devotional service.
So, when it says here these are compared to being, you know, to be haunted by witches and ghosts, what is that? How would that be practically explained? One is haunted by a witch or a ghost. What are they experiencing?
Fear.
Something that doesn't exist.
Most of it. They're in the most of it.
Yeah, I'm looking for a particular word. But these fear is there.
Praising and insanity also.
When you're doing something and say something comes along, what happens?
Distraction.
A little bit more stronger word in this case. It's not only a distraction, but a
impediment.
Okay. I think it's closer, but it's a little bit more stronger.
Stronger. Foolish.
What, you know, you're trying to do something and then all of a sudden you get hit, a ghost comes along and asks you. It's a disturbance. So these desires just create disturbances. When you're disturbed, you can't peacefully execute devotional service. Although you're trying to execute devotional service, these things are just disturbing your mind, because you're aspiring for something that you can't really achieve. Therefore, you're always disturbed. And disturbed. Okay. It's not an obstacle, it's a disturbance. Obstacles are something that you may face as you go along, but disturbance is something that you, in this case, is caused by wrong desire. You want these things, therefore you can't get them, therefore you're always disturbed. Obstacles are maybe something more external. Like obstacle would be getting sick, or an obstacle would maybe, you know, having to do a particular type of service that maybe considers to be very difficult. An obstacle may be, you know, is another person's presence or obnoxious behavior. But disturbance is something that, you know, this is going to be there just haunting you, harassing you all the time. I want sense gratification. I want sense. I'm practicing Krishna consciousness, but I really want sense gratification. You're always disturbed. And you may get it, and you feel a little relief from the disturbance for a few seconds. Okay. Eliana, you want to read?
My dear Swami Swanda, I cannot want any material happiness in the shape of many followers, nor immense happiness in wealth, nor any beautiful wife, nor do I want cessation from material existence. I may take birth many times, one after another, but what I pray for you is that my devotion unto you may always remain unflinching.
So you know that verse from Chaitanya's prayer? We say it every day. From the Shikshastri verse. You know the Shikshastri verse? So who knows that verse? Gonzalo, you know that verse?
I remember. Can you remember?
I don't want wealth, I don't want followers, I don't want pleasure of the opposite sex, I don't want even literary excellence, be a great poet. I mean, what do I want? I don't even want liberation. I want what? What do I aspire for? Devotional service. What?
Birth after birth.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. The devotional service is so nice that all these other things are simply just, there's no taste at all. I'm just lost in taste. And one only loses their taste when one practices the previous verse. Trinadupi Samichana Kayori Vasa Vishnana Mani Nama Mana Nena Kirtaniya Sada. When one practices humility, tolerance, pridelessness, and respect for all, and develops a taste for chanting, then this next verse will manifest in one's consciousness. In other words, one starts to naturally find distaste in these things, which is so tasty for many people. Na dana, I don't want wealth. Everyone wants wealth. Na jana, I don't want to have a group of followers. Everyone wants to be, you know, known as great, to have people following them and praising them and serving them. I'm not sundarin. I don't want the happiness of the opposite sex, nor even, Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, great literary accomplishments, which while they're seen by the common people as being very, I would be very unworshipped for this. I don't even want liberation. That's even better. No, what do I want devotional? So what do we understand here? Devotional service is so wonderful. It's so satisfying. And it's so powerful that even the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes his own devotee to experience the beauty of pure devotional. Even Krishna wants to be a devotee to show how wonderful devotional service is. So if we're not experiencing happiness in devotional service, that means we have a long way to go. If you're experiencing intermittent happiness, that means there's something, there's still an absence there. And if you're experiencing no happiness, you have a wrong understanding of the whole process. You're always miserable. You're simply on a theoretical platform. Giriraj Swami, Giriraj Brahmachari. Prabhupada, sometimes I'm in Maya. Prabhupada says, you're always in Maya. The way Prabhupada said it, it just went right to his heart. Here on Swami, he hit the floor in terms of relationship. Understanding that the quality of one in devotional service is they're always happy. Susuko. They're happy. A devotee is always happy. There's no need to be unhappy. If you're unhappy, that means you're in Maya. Now, happiness is not like, you know, I'm walking around with a big smile and just, you know. Happiness is an internal thing. One is feeling pleasure within. One is satisfied. One's mind is not half peaceful, and they're absorbed nicely in their service. They don't even care what service they're doing. They're so magnificent. They're happy.
Happiness and peaceful. Happiness
is a prelude to happiness. Peacefulness comes first. Because without peace, there's no happiness.
Peace first.
In
he can be happy. Not peaceful, I know that.
5:29 is here.
Yeah. Open on the Gita.
Krishna says in chapter 2, if you're not peaceful, no one's just bigger. You're being happy.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's telling you what Krishna said. Not like I'm just making it up. And what does peaceful mean? You're not aspiring for something material. As long as you want something material, you can't be peaceful. That's the problem. As soon as you let go of your material desire, as soon as you let go of trying to fulfill your material desires, then you can be peaceful. It's not that you can give up your material desires simply by. But as soon as you stop trying to fulfill them, then you can stop becoming peaceful. Just don't act on them, that's all. Just don't pay any attention to it. And the solution is to just keep your mind engaged in devotional service, and after a while you'll start feeling happy. But we just want material things. We expect it. And therefore when we don't get it, we don't get it. Okay, you sure you can read the next one. You read one thing ago. Let's see how much we got to go. You can read another one.
Glorification of the Lord, suffering, main qualities, death, etc. Death of the Lord does not care for mukti.
He doesn't care for mukti because he's got a high. He's so much attracted to these other activities. Okay, continue.
And as far as liberation is concerned, I think liberation stands at my door with folded hands, ready to serve me. To pure devotees, therefore, liberation is spiritual emancipation and I'm very satisfied.
What is the reason? Again, what's this verse, this section is emphasizing the glories of devotional service. It's helping us to understand that the devotional service is superior to all other forms of happiness, material and spiritual happiness. Okay, next, Shiva Prabhu.
In this connection, in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 25, verse 23, Kapila Deva advises his mother, Devahuti, as follows. My dear mother, my pure devotees are charmed by seeing my different forms, the beauty of my face, the structure of my body so enchanting, my laughing, my pastimes, and my glance appear to them so beautiful, that their minds are always absorbed in thoughts of me, and their lives are dedicated fully unto me. Although such people do not desire any kind of liberation or any kind of material happiness, still, I give them a place amongst my associates in the supreme abode. This evidence from Srimad Bhagavatam is assurance to the pure devotee of being elevated to association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Rupa Goswami remarks in this connection that one who is actually attracted by the beauty of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna or his service, and whose heart, by such attraction, is always filled full with transcendental bliss, will naturally never aspire after the liberation which is so valuable to many personalities.
Let's hold it. So, what's happening? What's being said here?
It's saying how the superiority of devotional service liberation.
So one is experiencing a higher taste. And what is that verse in Gita? When you get a higher taste?
59.
No?
I don't know the Sanskrit. The embodied soul may still may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the objects, though the desire for sense objects remains, but experiencing a higher taste is fixed in consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. So the desire is still there, but when one gets a higher taste, then they're fixed on the spiritual platform. Man is restricted from eating edibles because he's sick, and the taste for the edibles is there. So he can't give up that taste, but if he gets something better, then, you know, he's not attracted to that. You have to aspire for the higher taste. You have to go for the higher taste. You have to cry for the higher taste. You have to fight for the higher taste. I want that higher taste. Yeah, we have to want it. We have to want it. Krishna will see. Yeah, he wants it. All right. You shouldn't be so like, okay. No, we should be eager for it. Therefore, one is eager to get it. And eager for service. Eager to associate. Eager to chat. Eager to engage in, you know, activities of devotional service. They're eager to hear it, eager to read. Eager. I mean, I want that higher taste. I'm not going to settle for less. I want it. Krishna says, yeah, all right, you want it. Here it is. He's come to get it. Have to go for it. But if we just like, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Krishna, I'm getting beat by the higher taste. So the point is, higher taste is available if you want it. You have to want it. Devotional service, one of the qualities to get it is called, and we mentioned here, it's greed. You have to have it. You have to be greedy for it. You're not greedy for it, you can't get it. I want it. That doesn't defy humility and exactly the personification of humility. I want it. I want your mercy, Lord. I want that higher taste. I want to get out of this crazy material world of suffering. Yes.
Why it is so if you have material desire and you have a spiritual desire also. Especially devotees, they have some spiritual desire. How to chant nicely or go after God, they are engaged to worship Sangha. They have some desire. If you have some material desire, it's easy to fulfill. And if you have a material spiritual desire, it's difficult to fulfill. Why is that?
Why do you ask that question? You want to know how to fulfill your spiritual desires?
Yeah, so we are struggling very hard, especially devotees want to become pure devotees.
A devotee doesn't desire anything but to serve. Therefore, there's no problem. If you desire for something like, you know, if you should try to perfect your service by increasing the quality of your chanting, increasing the quality of your understanding of your spiritual You know, in other words, you should have aspired to improve, that's all. And there's still some desire, but you have to be enthusiastic for that. So material desires are easy in one sense because we've been doing them so long. It is unnatural. And they're valid. But you know, for a devotee, when a devotee is engaged in devotional service, when they go out and fulfill their material desires, they just feel terrible. After the, you know, they just feel terrible. Oh, let me go to a movie. I'll just take one night, I'll go and go hang out, have some pizza and go to the movie. Yeah, it doesn't matter. And after you do that, you know, what did I do? You know, Krishna doesn't give you any happiness in it. He just won't. And he won't let you enjoy it. You may be able to act on it, but in some sense, you're not going to get that value. To really perform devotional service is like, it's like painting a picture. And very carefully, you know, see how to add the colors in such a way as to make the beauty and the, you know, the design of the painting come alive. So in our devotional service, whatever we do, you know, we're trying to increase the quality, we're trying to increase the efficacy of it, we're trying to increase the quantity in many cases. We're trying to see how to make it better. I chanted nice rounds, let me chant nice rounds. And then when I sit down and read, let me read very carefully, very concentratedly. Let me scrutinize not how much I read, but how much I understand. Let me do everything with concentration, with devotion, with intelligence, and not just go through the motions. So when you do it like that, then you're actually increasing your spiritual desires, because the desire is to serve, and when you serve very carefully, you're not, now the question is not you're not doing it for your own pleasure, you're doing it to please Krishna. That's the point. I'm not only making mistakenly think, I'm all doing all this so I can feel more happiness in it. No, Krishna, if Krishna wants to give you happiness, he'll give it to you. If he doesn't want to give you happiness, he'll just allow you to go on with your activities. It's up to him whatever he wants to do. But the point is, the devotee doesn't worry about that. He's thinking, how can I serve best? Okay, where are we? Let's finish up the chapter and then we'll. Zala, you want to finish?
A similar passage is also there in the third canto, fourth chapter, verse 15 of the same book, wherein Uddhava addresses Lord Krishna and says, "My dear Lord, for persons who are engaged in your transcendental loving service, there is nothing worth obtaining from religion, economic development, sense gratification, or liberation. Although happiness from these different sources can be very easily had by them, in spite of such facilities, my dear Lord, I do not aspire to achieve any such results. My only prayer is that I may have unflinching faith and devotion unto your lotus feet." A similar passage appears in the third canto, 25th chapter, verse 34, wherein Kapila Deva instructs his mother and says, "My dear mother, devotees whose hearts are always filled in the service of my lotus feet, and who are prepared to do anything for my satisfaction, especially those fortunate devotees who assemble together to understand my qualities, pastimes, and form, and thus glorify me congregationally and derive transcendental pleasure therefrom, never desire to become one with me, and want to speak of becoming one with me, if they are offer opposed like mine in my abode, or openness like mine, or even personal association with me with similar bodily features, they refuse to accept because they are satisfied simply by being engaged in my devotional service.
Devotional service is so wonderful. Yeah. All these other things, one doesn't aspire for them. Okay.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, 9th chapter, verse 10, King Dhruva says, "My dear Lord, the transcendental pleasure derived by meditation upon your lotus feet, which is enjoyed by the pure devotees, cannot be approached by the transcendental pleasure derived by the impersonalists to self-realization. So how can the fruitful workers, who at most can aspire to promotion to the higher heavenly planets, understand you? And how can they be described as enjoying a happiness similar to the devotee's happiness?"
And that's a rhetorical statement. How is it possible that they can, you know, be enjoying any happiness in the world? Bhagavananda Swarasati explains, talks about impersonal liberation. He says liberation and elevation to the heavenly planets is compared to liberation is compared to hell, and elevation to the heavenly planets is just a phantasmagoria. In other words, it's just a dream that doesn't really have any reality in the life of the devotee. In the material world, those who are a little progressive in their understanding of life aspire for heaven or better material situations, which means elevation to better planets, where there are so much more facilities for sense gratification and longevity. And that's considered a very lofty achievement for those who are in the material world. But a devotee sees that as simply a diversion from the real goal. He has no... So how can there be any happiness in that? That's the question. There is no happiness. In fact, the devotee will get scared, thinking that if I ever have to go to heaven, God, that would be the worst thing. Better to go to hell, because that way I can call out for you in great feeling. Heaven, I will forget you. Okay, we won't have time to begin the fourth chapter. And I'm also, tomorrow I leave for 12 days. So next week I will be able to give a class, or on Thursday. So I would suggest you read. I'll be back on the 18th. That'll be the next class. So there'll be a break for about 12 days. Read chapter 4, and I'll give you some questions, and then. What we'll do is that when I come back, we'll go over the questions in chapter 4 and read chapter 5 and just read it. That's all. No questions for this one. So read chapter 4 and 5 and answer questions on chapter 4. That's not so much for 2 weeks, is it?
Read chapter 5, sir?
Yeah.
4.
Okay. Okay, and I'll give you some questions for chapter 4. Okay, you ready? So there's questions from chapter 4. Chapter 4 is called Devotional Service Surpasses All Liberation. Now I'll give you some references from Srimad Bhagavatam which you can use to enhance your study. And they are, here's some quick ones. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:20-24, 5:14-44, 6:11-25, 6:17-28, 6:18-74, 7:6-25, and 7:8-42. There's more. These are just, if you want to just, you know, cross-reference the points, you can go to these verses, and these verses deal with the points in the chapter. Let me give you some more. 8:3:40, 9:4:67, 10:16:37, 10:87:21, 11:20:34, 11:14:14, and 12:10:6.
What's that? 11:42:42.
11:14:14. 11:20:34. Okay. Questions. 6 questions. Prove that devotional service is beyond liberation. All right. Simple statement giving proof that devotional service. You may use an example to prove it. Or you just may use an explanation. Prove that devotional service is beyond liberation. Briefly explain how it is everyone's duty to offer everything for the satisfaction of the Lord, and prove that this will bring happiness and enjoyment to them. Check number 3. Explain how the devotees, though giving up all material enjoyment, still enjoy happiness. Describe the story of the two sons of Kuvera and explain how this story proves that devotional service is the highest perfection of liberation.
Describe the story of the two sons of
Kuvera.
Kuvera.
And how this story proves that devotional service is the highest perfection beyond liberation.
Why aren't the devotees interested in liberation? To the Vaikuntha planets. Although it gives association of Krishna. Explain briefly. Number six and last, prove that the devotees of Lord Krishna are the topmost amongst all the devotees. Prove that the devotees of Lord Krishna are the topmost amongst all the devotees. Keep running last night. I was running until I had to shot him, but now I'm just ready to just take this. But I can't. I have to keep on going. Emotional service is sweet, although you're tired. If you just forget about your situation, then you can do it. As soon as you remember how you feel, then it's terrible. It works like this. If I think about if I'm tired, then I'm tired. If I stop thinking about it, I'm okay. Emotional service is so powerful. I know there's sometimes you sleep 2 or 3 hours a night. So, of course, we have it. A lot of energy. So you can do it like you did before. But if you want to do it for the rest of the devotees,
I think I would send you a note. Questions? I'll type them up in that. I'll send you a note. I'll get your email address.
Okay. Any questions?
Anything?
It's okay. It's interesting. It is? Interesting? Yeah, you like it? You're learning something? The more you know about Krishna consciousness, the more you find that everything about it is so wonderful. It's such an exact science of devotion. There's nothing to do with anything material. But when non-devotees see devotees performing devotional service, just like many of us, most of them, they just look, they say, well, they're doing the same thing we're doing. They're just dressed different. But they don't understand that behind the activity there's a different consciousness, completely. Not just slightly, completely different. And that's where people can penetrate simply by, you know, external observation. Yes.
Prabhupada, one time in the class, Krishna said, if we serve him, if we serve Krishna more and more, then Krishna will be more intelligent to serve him better.
Yeah.
And what's the need of reading? Sorry, Krishna is intelligent.
You have my blessings. Go for it. Prabhupada said, if you simply chant Hare Krishna, engage in devotional service, that's all you need. For those who have scientific minds and want to know more, we have our books. So if you're okay, then you don't need to read. Stay engaged. But then if your mind gives you trouble, you better sit down and read or chant. So,
Actually, that's a fact. Philosophy can, you know, too much study in philosophy can get in the way of one's devotional life. If one is actually experiencing the nectar, just by doing the activity, as you often do. Sometimes you can go from, you know, the phase, so you're feeling blissful. So there is, but generally in Kali Yuga, people can't do that unless they reach the liberation platform. So the books help you see everything clearly, because the thing is, Maya is subtle. And Maya is very subtle, and she's also very, you know, she looks like Krishna. And if you don't know how to distinguish between Maya and Krishna, you may think you've been doing devotional service, but you may also be increasing your material desires. That's why we need the philosophy to keep us clear. And the books help us to see. There's two things that you should look for in your devotional service to know whether you're making advancement. One, if you still have a taste for material life, you know you still have a ways to go. If you look out that window and you think there's something out there that can help you, that you need, then you still have a long ways to go. It's out there, but if you think you need it, then you really don't understand devotional service. Or you're still attracted, and that's normal. So it means you still have to work. And the other thing is, you're increasing your desire to serve. So one's advancement means the material fever is going down, spiritual enthusiasm is increasing. Second indication of one is making advancement is that they're developing the qualities of the Vaishnava. And there's 26 qualities mentioned. So measure yourself against those qualities and see how much you're imbibing them. And then you can see, oh, yes. I still didn't have these qualities outside. You know, you can more or less take a little inventory. So these are the two barometers for understanding. Material fevers are going down, spiritual enthusiasm is increasing, material and qualities of a Vaishnava are starting to develop within
one's heart and mind connected.
So that's why we read the books, to be able to understand exactly, you know, what we need to do, you know, how to perform devotional service. But once you get absorbed in the service, then you're already on the conclusion of all shastras, because the conclusion of all scriptures is to serve Krishna without any motivation. Ahayatu kiya priyata, to serve Krishna without any motivation, without any stoppage. So if you're doing that, forget it, don't have to worry about reading. The conclusion of all Vedic literature is already there within your life. But if you're not on that platform, it's good to read so you can help you get to that platform. Good to understand the philosophy. Reading gets you there. And once you're there, then, you know, so you can still read, but at the same time read and study, but, you know, it's not like if you don't, it's going to make a difference. The problem is, Maya in Kali Yuga is very strong, very subtle, so therefore it's easy to get tripped up. Easy. Very easy. So we should remain enthusiastic, but we should remain intelligent. And that's what enthusiasm means, to endeavor with intelligence. Not just to endeavor, but in an intelligent way. How best to serve Krishna? How to avoid Maya's traps? Okay, I have a program coming up at 6:30 tonight, so I have to go.